taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We help the rising generation to live free. I'm hoping you're prepared. It's Christmas time, so I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas. We know we have some special programming anticipated on America Out Loud during this time. But regardless of how you plan to celebrate this season, what your plans are, I do wish that you all be happy, be healthy, enjoy the freedoms and liberties we still have. And I want us to, today, I'm really coming to a basic question. And that is, who do we trust? More accurately, I guess, to say, are the people and the institutions we've placed our trust in worthy of that trust? So I want to take a look at some news stories that kind of brought to my attention this question of trust. The first being an announcement from the White House, from the COVID-19 response coordinator, Jeff Zients, predicting a weather of severe illness and death for America. Well, let's see, they've gotten it wrong so far, so am I really worried? Now, I'm not saying there won't be some severe illness. There will be severe illnesses, but we have severe illnesses every year. I'm not saying there won't be deaths. We have deaths every year. But according to this, the response, if you're unvaccinated, you're expected to, have a miserable winter and possibly die. Quoting, he said, for the unvaccinated, you're looking at a winter of severe illness and death. Except looking at the data, it doesn't match up. We're still dealing with an infection rate of, one-sixth of the American people? Less than that, right? Because we've got roughly just under 51 million cases have been reported. And that's assuming this is taking the CDC's number. I'm looking at the CDC website. And we know that those case numbers are, let's just say not as trustworthy as we would like. But even taking those numbers, right, 51 million cases out of roughly, 330 million Americans, that's 15%. So even ignoring the unvaccinated, even ignoring the fact that the vaccinated are still getting sick, or at least they're getting COVID, although they may not be having quite as severe symptoms, but they're having some other serious problems as well. So when the White House warns me that because I'm unvaccinated, I need to look at a winter severe illness and death, I'm sorry. You've proven yourself untrustworthy. I'm not going to trust the word that you're saying. So if you've decided not to get vaccinated, and by the way, even if you have decided to get vaccinated, don't fear. Don't give in to the fear-mongering. Again, do what you can. Take care of yourself. Little things we've all been taught, right? Washing your hands, making sure you're eating right, getting exercise, getting enough sleep, things like vitamin C, D, and zinc that all help support your immune system. These are all things that we can do. But don't fall for the fear, because they've warned us about this before. They've called wolf before, and it's really time we stop. Falling for it. But you see, they're not the only ones that we have to question the trustworthiness of. See, one of the things about being in my position is I have a lot of people that ask me for advice. They come to me with their stories. Many of them are heartbreaking, where they're seeing an infringement on their rights, and they're asking, what do we do? What do we do? And many of them, they look to the courts. The courts will save us, right? All I got is sue. I've got a great case. All I have to do is sue. There's one problem. You see, courts are well, courts have judges. And judges are people. They're human. They're susceptible to the same foibles as anyone else. So when people cheered when a district when several district courts put injunctions on Biden's illegal, unconstitutional, immoral vaccine mandates for private businesses, people cheered. They said, yes, we've won. I saw multiple headlines that said, you know, hey, the mandate is dead. The courts have killed it. The courts, except now we have an appeals court that has reinstated the mandate. See, he who lives by the court dies by the court. If you're trusting in a court to protect your rights, you're just one bad judge away from losing your rights. So a Sixth Circuit judge, Jane Stranch, issued the opinion of the court. She states, the COVID-19 pandemic has wreaked havoc on America, leading to the loss of over 800,000 lives, shutting down workplaces and jobs across the country, and threatening our economy. Well, wait a second. The pandemic didn't shut down workplaces. It didn't destroy jobs. It didn't threaten our economy. The act of politicians did that. Now, the number 800,000 lives, leading to the loss of over 800,000 lives, that's the CDC number. But the CDC admitted earlier this year that 94% of those deaths are not necessarily people who died of COVID, but people who died with COVID. That on average, there were 2.4 other causes of death, not illnesses, reasons they died. They had multiple complications, of which COVID was one of them. And there are numerous reports of people dying from traffic accidents and heart attacks and other diseases only to test positive for COVID, needless as a COVID death. So the numbers that this judge is using, they're not that trustworthy to begin with. She goes on to talk about how, oh, the virus rages, and she says, quote, despite access to vaccines and better testing, however, the virus rages on, mutating into different variants and posing new risks. Well, okay, yeah, there are access to treatments, to preventatives, I should say. Most of them are not vaccines. I believe the Johnson & Johnson's an actual vaccine. The Moderna and Pfizer, well, they're gene therapy. They're not designed to create an immunity so much as to COVID as to the spike protein that is part of COVID. I've heard doctors saying this actually has led to the focus on vaccination has led to the mutation as pressure is applied to the virus in an effort to survive with the vaccines. It actually promotes variants. But while there may be new risks, those risks are quite mild. In other words, it seems like every variant, while becoming more contagious, is less virulent. But that shouldn't be an issue. The question should be, does the executive branch have the legal and constitutional authority to issue this mandate? Now, again, quoting from the opinion, in need of guidance on how to protect their employees from COVID-19 transmission while reopening businesses, employers turn to the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. That's a bald-faced lie, madam. It is. Businesses weren't looking to OSHA for guidance. They were getting guidance from the CDC and the FDA. OSHA did not do this because employers were asking for it. OSHA did this because the president, in a political move at a public address, said he would do it. So this OSHA mandate is not a medical decision because OSHA is not staffed with medical personnel. This is a political move made by the commander in chief. The emergency temporary standard is a political snow job. It is not to protect the health of employees. It actually endangers many employees. It endangers many of the American people because, among other things, the president, not in this particular one, but has used these mandates to attempt to force healthcare workers to comply. And now we have insufficient healthcare workers to where states are actually calling up the National Guard because they can't get enough healthcare workers to work in this toxic environment. So they dissolve the stay. And based on what? Well, they said Congress passed the Occupational Safety and Health Act in 1970 to assure safe and healthy working conditions for the nation's workforce. Except no, it was to provide safety, not medical decisions. And even that is constitutionally questionable. I haven't read the entire opinion. I haven't read the whole thing. What I've read so far is a political maelstrom of reasons why the government should be allowed to do whatever the heck it feels like, regardless of what the Constitution says. Right? The federal government, the Congress did not grant OSHA the authority to issue ETSs based on medical decisions. They did not. Congress doesn't have the authority to even establish OSHA because it's not a power delegated to the United States. So that makes it a violation of the Constitution, something that this judge swore an oath to support. This is who you're going to trust to protect your rights. So to all those who cheered when the circuit courts started putting injunctions and stays on this illegal mandate, all it took was a couple of judges to say, nope, we're going to wipe it all out because we think the government should be able to do this. And now this is going to go to the Supreme Court. So now everyone is waiting with bated breath to see how five of the nine justices in black robes, these high priests of their own opinions, will look at this. Again, I'm not holding my breath because regardless of what the Supreme Court says, this is an unconstitutional mandate. It is illegal. It is a violation of it is a federal crime to implement this. But you see, most people don't recognize that. They don't realize that OSHA itself is an illegal agency. Show me where in the Constitution is the United States authorized to regulate employment standards? The entire Department of Labor is unconstitutional, unless it's dealing with labor within the federal government, because labor is not interstate commerce. It's not, therefore, it's not a power delegated to the United States. See, we're trusting in these little things to protect us, missing the big picture. Missing the fact that most of the stuff that's being done is illegal. And until we, the people, recognize that Congress cannot do whatever it wants, the Article 6, Clause 2 says the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Only laws of the United States made pursuant to the Constitution are also considered supreme over state law and state constitutions. That the 10th Amendment says that any power not delegated to the United States is not one they can exercise. It either remains with the states or with the people. So these powers that they are exercising, that are not delegated, they've stolen them. The federal government's become a criminal enterprise. Not the government itself. The people in the government have turned this into its own mafia, its own mob, its own organized crime, with its own rules, its own standards, and its own variation of made men. And these are the people you're trusting for your rights? See, that's why John Jay said every member of the state ought diligently to read and study the Constitution of his country, so that we will recognize when our rights are being violated and be prepared to defend and assert them. That's why we are to teach our children to be free, so that they recognize when their rights are being violated. So that they can live free, so they can defend their rights, stand up for their rights, exercise their rights. And as we watch different groups, we watch different attorneys general from around the country as we watch businesses, as we watch different ministries and organizations look to the Supreme Court to save them from their own creation, we should realize we've missed something. Whether it's, you know, I'm watching all these organizations. I'm looking at several of them, right? So we've got several companies, according to one report, three companies and an attorney general. We have a Christian ministry. We have the Buckeye Institute, all of which are looking to the Supreme Court to save them, to save us from our own creation. See, there's one thing people miss, and this is one of those areas, it gets a little interesting, but the preamble of the Constitution says that we the people do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. We agree to it. This Constitution that created the federal government, created Congress, created the presidency, even created the Supreme Court, we ordained and established. Now, we didn't do it directly. We did it through our states. Why? Because Article 5 says the Constitution, well, actually, Article 7 says the Constitution doesn't take effect until the states, 9 of the 13 states, ratify it. And any amendment to it must be ratified by the states. So we did it through our states. But still, we created the federal government. We created the office that President Biden sits in. We created the office that Representative Pelosi and Senator Schumer said, we created them. We delegated them powers. We created the Supreme Court that people are now going to beg for their protection of their rights. We created them. And we've lost that idea. We're looking for other people to protect our rights, not recognizing it's up to us. Sure, I'd love to live in a world where other people would protect my rights for me, where I didn't have to worry about things, where I didn't have to follow up on my elected employees, where I didn't have to hold people accountable for their illegal, where everybody just did what was right. But we don't live in that country. We don't live in that world. And here's the other thing to consider. If you are dependent on other people to protect your rights, are they truly your rights? Or are they just lent to you by those organizations? Now, this is important, so follow me for a minute. So you have the right to be free. You have the right to life, liberty, and property, to not be deprived any of them without due process of law. In other words, without a process that protects your rights. So if you're dependent on Congress to protect your rights for you, well, are the rights actually yours? Or do they belong to Congress? And that Congress simply allows you to exercise them as they see fit. If you're dependent on the president to protect your rights, are they truly yours? Or do they belong to the presidency and you only get to use the ones that he, one day she, says you're allowed to exercise? And if you're dependent on the courts, if your rights are dependent on the opinion of 9 judges in black robes, I say they're not your rights. Those are the rights of the courts. And the courts will decide what rights you can and cannot exercise and under what conditions and which ones they'll protect and which ones they won't. And if you think I'm exaggerating, if you think I'm being hyperbolic, well, go to your favorite search engine and look up levels of scrutiny. Now, what are levels of scrutiny? Basically, these are judicial standards of how hard the government has to work to infringe on your rights. See, if you look at many of these court cases, they argue not whether or not the Constitution allows it, but what level of scrutiny they have to go through to determine if the government can infringe on your rights. For example, and I'm reading from FindLaw's website of the 3 levels of scrutiny when you're dealing with constitutional issues. Now, the first one, the highest one, is called strict scrutiny. And that says there is a compelling state interest behind the challenge policy, and the law or regulation is narrowly tailored to achieve the results. Notice it says nothing about your rights. So when the Constitution says that your right to peaceably assemble, your right to freely speak or to exercise your religion, or to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed or shall not be abridged. Well, the court says, well, is there a compelling state interest in abridging your rights? And is the policy tailored narrowly enough to say, you know what, we're only going to infringe on your rights thus far? Then you've got intermediate scrutiny, which says, well, it's a severe or important government objective. And there has to be substantially related to the achieved goal. So if government wants to deprive you of your liberty or your life or your property without due process of law, well, is there an important government objective behind that? And as they've shown that they've got a the policy is substantially related to the to achieving the objective. Again, nothing about your rights. And then the lowest level review, what's called the rational basis review. The government has no legitimate interest in the law or policy, or there's no reasonable rational link between the interest and the challenged law. Again, nothing about your rights. So when they're talking about scrutiny, which, again, in a lot of constitutional cases, that's the first question is, what level of scrutiny do we apply? It's literally, how hard are we going to make the government work in order to be able to infringe on your rights? And these are the people you're trusting to protect your rights. They've shown they won't do it. They've shown that they're not trustworthy enough to do that. Now, there are things that, what can we the people do? That's probably the biggest question. What can we the people do? And I'm going to cover that in the second half of the show. But before then, I want you to consider this as we're going into the break. What would you give for your right to freedom? What would you give to be at liberty, to live without external influence except by natural law and what is necessary for safety and security of the society? What would you give for that? What would you give for the ability to not be deprived of what you own, of control of your body, of control of what you do, what you say, what you think, how you act? What would you give for that? See, when they signed the Declaration of Independence, when they declared that the government in London was no longer protecting the rights of the people, no longer doing its job, and they would separate and create one of their own, they pledged to each other their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. See, they were willing to risk quite a bit for the freedom to live not as subjects of a monarch, but as masters of their government. They wrote that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They wrote that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it. They were willing to risk a lot. So when they pledged to each other their lives were in jeopardy. Not simply the comforts of home or the ability to be on social media, but their ability to take another breath. Their fortunes, not simply the convenience of shopping at a store because it's a little bit cheaper or it's a little bit more convenient. Many of them lost fortunes funding our fight for liberty. and they pledged their sacred honor. They looked each other in the eye and said, "We will stand with each other because this is right." Not a question of convenience. No longer begging the king to protect their rights. No longer begging Parliament to stand up for them. No longer trusting the governors the king had put in place to protect their rights. They would do it themselves. It was scary. And today, we again are on a brink of another sea change, potentially a revolution. The only good news is we don't have to fight a war to alter our government. We, the people, need to take responsibility for it. We need to stand up and enforce the rules that we created over our government, state, local, and federal. We need to pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. By lives, I don't necessarily mean that you need to be prepared to die for it, although some of us will. But are you willing to live a life of freedom and liberty rather than one of dependence on others? Are you willing to spend your fortunes on things that enhance the freedom of liberty for yourself and for others, to support those and their businesses that protect your liberty and not support those that would destroy it? Will you look your neighbor in the eye and on your honor pledge to protect their rights, even if it costs you something, even if it costs you dearly? Because if we look for someone else to protect our life, our finances, and our honor, we will find that we are their subjects, not their masters. Now, before I go to break, please check out constitutionstudy.com. That's where I write all my articles and videos, and you can ask questions. You can have me answer them here on the radio. All of it's there. Just go to constitutionstudy.com for more information. Also, I'd love you to check out healthycell.com. You know, whether we're talking about these quote-unquote vaccine mandates or the fear-mongering of White House that we're going to have if you don't get vaccinated, you're going to have a terrible winter. The best thing you can do is keep yourself healthy. Now, if you're like me, you take vitamins, but, you know, they haven't changed those much since the 1930s. So Healthy Cell came along and they've reinvented the vitamin. They have formulas to feed you at the cellular level, to boost your immune system, to help you sleep better, to help you focus. And instead of taking a handful of pills, it's an easy-to-use gel pack. Now, they have several different formulas, but since we're talking COVID, the best thing you do is take the Immune Super Boost. It gives your body what it needs to naturally defend yourself against COVID or any virus or disease you may encounter. And as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. So do me a favor, go to healthycell.com/outloud, try one of their packages. And again, by going to healthycell.com/outloud, you'll get 20% off your very first order.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per month. But by simply keeping our immune system strong, we can stay healthy and put our worries at ease. One little known way to do this is by taking AC11, a patented supplement from a plant in the Amazon rainforest. Studied for over 20 years and backed by over 40 scientific peer-reviewed studies, taking AC11 has been proven to extend the life of immune cells called leukocytes, allowing you to boost immunity naturally. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of AC11. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
I'm excited to talk about a new product from Healthy Cell, AC11. This is a patented bioactive extract of Uncaria tomentosa from the Amazon rainforest. It supports cell DNA repair and health span. It's a dietary supplement. I'm excited to try it. Many are interested in longevity and attenuation of senescence. We know that telomere length and other biologic measures are related to senescence in clinical and preclinical studies, particularly of animal models. And I can tell you as a doctor, dietary supplements do hold the promise of attenuating repair and damage in our body due to stress, physical wear and tear, sunlight, etc. And there's a tremendous opportunity for supplements to help us in this area. And so Healthy Cell has brought a product to market for you to try as part of your health portfolio. So please go to healthycell.com and in the promotional code, list out loud for 20% off your first purchase of products from Healthy Cell. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
The America Out Loud family is comprised of patriots in the true sense of the word. We know that if America fails, the world will fail. It is incumbent upon us to carry the torch for liberty and the Constitution to help save America for future generations to come. AmericaOutloud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Glad you could join me. You know, I ended the first half of the program with the question, what can we do? Well, there are several things we can do at several different levels. So let's take a look at some of them. Apparently, Boeing has become one in a list of companies that said, you know what? We're not going to implement the vaccine mandate, the quote-unquote vaccine mandate. Well, at least not until the federal government forces us to. So if you're an employee of Boeing, you've got room to be mildly happy. I mean, yeah, they're not going to implement it now. They're going to wait till the courts get done fighting with it. But Boeing is just one in a list of companies that have started doing this. I talked the other day about healthcare companies that are backing off because they can't get enough healthcare workers. I talked about airline CEOs that are pushed back on mask and vaccine mandates as being ineffective. See, we can hope that the people we work for, well, they'll help defend us. Now, if you work for a company that is defending your rights, well, good for you. I'm happy for you. But you see, I walked away from corporate America, and boy, am I glad I did. Because if I hadn't walked away before, I know the companies that I worked for. And I know they would have been first in line for the vaccine mandates. And I'd have been in a very difficult position. Thankfully, well, at the moment, I'm not. But if you're depending on your company to protect you, well, don't you become a subject to the company? I mean, if you work for Boeing and you say, yay, I don't need to get the vaccine because, well, Boeing says I don't have to, what happens when they say that you do? It's a temporary victory. And what if it's not the vaccine? What if it's something else? See, we rely on a lot of people for a lot of things. One of the things I see a lot, again, people come to me with a lot of questions, with a lot of statements, with a lot of information. And I ask, you know, well, based on what? See, it was interesting. I was at a doctor's office not that long ago with my wife, and we were talking about masks and mask effectiveness. And of course, a lot of people went, well, there's these studies. In fact, the CDC director Walensky points to a study out of Arizona. Now, what's interesting is the study compared schools in two Arizona counties. Of the 210 schools with mask mandates, only 16 had outbreaks. And among the 480 schools without mask mandates were 113 outbreaks. All right, now I'm not a virologist and I'm not a statistician, but I can already tell those numbers are questionable. But let's go on. See, there were some experts that are now bringing into question the quality of that data. I'm reading, I found this article on Hot Air, and I'm reading quotes from these experts. They said, the study's methodology and data set appear to have significant flaws. The trouble begins with the opening lines of the paper, where the authors say they evaluated the association between school mask policies and school-associated COVID-19 outbreaks during July 15th to August 31st, 2021. After reviewing the school calendars and speaking with several school administrators in Maricopa and Pima counties, I found that only a small portion of the schools in the study were open at any point during July. Some didn't begin class until August 10th. Others were open from July 19th or July 21st. That means students in the latter group of schools had twice as much time, 6 weeks instead of 3 weeks, in which to develop a COVID outbreak. Now, according to the study's corresponding author, the difference in start dates was minuscule. It wasn't enough to make a difference, but experts say any difference could have skewed the details, skewed the data. Another expert called the study ridiculous because it didn't control for vaccination status of the students or the teachers. I guess there were some questions about the schools that were chosen. The author here talks about, got a list of 891 public non-charter schools in Maricopa County, found that 40 of them were virtual learning academies, 20 were preschools, and 90, well, they were vocational programs outside of the otherwise listed schools. So we've got a report, but is the data in the report? Do we trust the data in the report? Again, if it comes from the CDC, I'm questioning to begin with. It looks like I've got good reason to. So when the CDC announces that it will allow children who have been exposed to COVID-19 to remain in school if they test negative at least twice a week, well, hang on a second. When did we give the CDC authority over schools? In fact, when do we give the CDC authority over our lives, period? So I don't remember delegating that power in the Constitution to the United States. Now, they may have a laudable goal, but we're back to, the school districts don't work for the CDC. They're supposed to work for the parents, supposed to work for the community. Shouldn't it be up to the community to decide when children who have been infected would be allowed back into their school? See, but too many of us, we're going to trust the federal bureaucrats. Well, the CDC is there to keep us safe. The CDC is a bureaucracy. And I know we'd love to, the CDC, the FDA, OSHA, Department of Labor, these are all bureaucracies. That means their primary goals are political, not medical, and not vocational. So when the CDC says it will allow, first of all, CDC, if you come and try to take a child out of this school, I'm calling the sheriff and have you arrested for kidnapping. You've not been given legal authority to do so. So they don't have the authority to tell them. And if you have a student in school, you better remind your school board that the school board works for you, not for the CDC. Because if you're going to trust the government to determine when you can and cannot go to school, when your students can and cannot go to school, whether or not they're going to put something in their body, whether or not they're going to wear masks, you're no longer free. You are subjects. You are slaves to a bureaucracy. Now, we trust these bureaucracies do a lot for us. For example, the U.S. Department of Education got a lot of money that was meant as COVID relief to have schools reopen. But once again, we see that that money wasn't used necessarily for what it was called for. So we found that of the $190 billion, these are three relief packages, $190 billion with a B, dollars. We find that millions were used to give people COVID-19 bonuses, to give teachers pay raises, even to cover basic payroll. For example, the state of Connecticut was given $1.6 billion in COVID relief funds for schools. They spent $21 million on personal services and salaries, and another $2.6 million on employee benefits. Detroit public schools used $60 million of its pandemic relief fund to give out bonuses. See, when people come to us, when politicians come and say, we're going to spend this money to get the schools open, we trust that they're going to do what they say they're going to do. But experience should show us that they rarely do. And that the money that they take out of our pocket, that we send to Washington to come back to our states, well, first of all, it always comes back a little smaller than what we sent out, at least overall. The monies that the states send to Washington, D.C. never comes back in full. And then that money is not always used for what we were told was going to be used for. So let me ask you, do you trust them? When Washington says we're going to spend $190 billion to reopen schools, did you trust them when they said that? I didn't. Do you know why? Well, they're politicians. How can you tell when a politician's lying? Their lips are moving. But you see, if you sit back and say, well, gee, you know, it's $190 billion. That's a lot of money, but it's for the children. It's to get the schools open so the children can go back to school. Except not all of it is. And you find out that maybe you've trusted your own version of a Ponzi scheme. Then there was this little announcement that the Biden administration wants to offer bonuses to doctors who create and implement anti-racism plans. All right, now first of all, whenever Washington talks about anti-racism plan, it generally is a racist plan. I know, I wish it could be different, but it isn't. But under new rules from the Department of Health and Human Services, they want to update Medicare. And they want to make sure that if they want to encourage, they want to bribe doctors, we'll pay you more if you create a racist plan that we put under our list of anti-racism plans. First of all, do you trust the government to not be racist? I don't. Almost everything the government does seem to be based on race or sex or something along those lines. The government seems more focused on people's race and sex than the people themselves. But do you think it's right for the federal government to take your money to bribe doctors to implement a plan they want? That's what this is. See, the Constitution does not authorize Congress to collect taxes to pay doctors. It doesn't. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 says this: Congress can lay and collect taxes to pay for the debts, to provide for the common defense, and the general welfare of the United States, the Union, the country, the federal government, effectively. That's the government of the United States. Nothing in there about paying doctors, nothing about there about racist plans. But you see, the government expects you to trust them. Why? Well, because we decided that we'd let government deal with any racist issues we have. See, we didn't want to be bothered with actually combating racism ourselves. No. We'll let the government bully other people to do what we want. And we decided, you know what? We're not going to take care of our own medical issues. No. We'll get the government to steal money from other people to do that. And now we expect people to trust the government that whatever anti-racism plans they will validate will actually be anti-racist. They will say, don't judge people based on the color of their skin. Do you believe that? Because if you do, I have a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you, and I have some oceanfront property in Nevada to sell you as well. Because government doesn't do that. I would love it if government did, but it doesn't. It's the reason why the powers of making medical decisions or implementing domestic policy were not given to the United States. Look at the Constitution. Look at Article 1, of the Constitution. Look at the powers delegated. They deal with mostly with foreign affairs and interstate affairs, how the states work with each other, not internal domestic affairs. Do you know why? Because our founding fathers knew not to trust the coalition of power into smaller and smaller groups. They knew that the more you concentrate power, the more you concentrate corruption. That's why Medicaid and Medicare are unconstitutional. That's why the Department of Education is unconstitutional. That's why the Department of Housing and Urban Development or Health and Human Services or go on and on and on. That's why they're unconstitutional. That's why they're illegal. Because our founding fathers knew you could not trust the central government. Yet look at our lives today. It seems almost all the trust is placed in the central government. They've abused that trust. People have lost faith in that trust, at least many of them have. And now we're reaping the consequences. Let's forget legislation. Let's forget the rule of law. Let's forget the Constitution. If the president wants to do something, he's just going to... He doesn't even sign an executive order half the time. He'll just announce it in a press conference and have the executive minions put together the rules. We don't care if it's legal or not. We don't care if it's constitutional. It's what they can get away with. That's what happens with a blind trust in a bureaucracy. When we allow the president to act like the legislature, when we allow the president to act like the courts, when we allow the courts to act like the dictators whose whim and wish supersede the law of the land, and when we allow Congress to act as a star chamber. Yeah, see that remember that January 6th committee? Remember, Congress does not have any investigative powers. Their power is to write law, not to investigate the violations of that law. So if anyone is surprised that this January 6th committee, special committee, a committee birthed in political division, political dissension, the desire for revenge against a political opponent, steeped in the political hatred that is Washington, D.C. today, to the point where, quote-unquote, evidence is being lied about, where text messages are being misrepresented, where members of the committee are outright lying about what people have said and what people have done. Do you trust them to get to the truth? Because I don't. So if we can't trust our government to protect our rights, if we can't trust our states to protect our rights, if we can't trust our businesses to protect our rights, who can you trust? Ultimately, the only one you could really trust is yourself. Oh, sure, I would love to have a government that protects our rights. I'd love to have governments at all levels protecting our rights. That is the job they were created for. I wish they actually did it. But we forget the governments are not these autonomous actors. As Abraham Lincoln put it, the people are the rightful masters of both Congresses and courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert the Constitution. But you see, we've given up on that responsibility. See, we act as if Congress and courts are masters of us, not the other way around. We act like those that we send into public office are our rulers. We act like bureaucrats that are hired by those we've elected, that they are our rulers, not our servants. So how do we change it? Well, First, to take a word from President Reagan, you trust, but verify. And the other place you start is you start local. See, don't start by trying to fix Washington, D.C. Start by trying to fix your own, your neighborhood, your county, your town, your city. Find your elected representatives, your employees in those offices. Learn about them. Learn at what, look at what they do, not what they say, not their campaign rhetoric, what they actually do. Then compare that to what the Constitution of the state, of the United States, what their charters, what their city ordinances, what do they actually say? Are they abiding by their oath to support the Constitution of the state in the United States? And if not, why do you trust them? If you can't trust them, well, why do you vote for them? See, it kind of makes a logical progression, right? If I can't trust you to do what you told me you're going to do, you come to me promising to follow the law, to support the Constitution of the state in the United States. If I can't trust you to do that, why should I keep you in that job? Now, yes, I say start local, start at the county, start at the city, because they're the ones you have the greatest influence over. They're also the ones that tend to feed the higher offices, right? So many of the people who run for state office started at the county level. But even at the state level, okay, talk to them. Do they know what the Constitution says their jobs are? Do they know the constitutions they've sworn an oath to support? And look at what they do. I don't care what people say. You know, sometimes people look at me askance when I say this, but I really don't care what people say. I remember I was working in corporate America and we had gotten a new manager. And the manager was having one-on-one meetings with all the employees on the team. And it was my turn. And, you know, we sat down and we talked a little bit. And at one point, he said, "So do you have any questions?" I said, "No, not really." He says, "Really?" I says, "Yeah." He says, I said, "Don't take this wrong, but I put fairly little stock in what people say and much more stock in what people do. What you've said sounded great, but it's not going to get me excited. I'm not going to trust you because you said something. I'm going to wait to see what you do. And when you do, well, then I'll judge. And then maybe I'll have questions. But right now, it's just talk." This took the particular manager back a bit. But I remember, I guess it was a year after they took the job, getting a phone call from that very same manager and asking, and him asking me, "So, how did I do?" I think that's the attitude we need to have for our employees at all levels. I don't care what you say. Show me what you did. Now, hopefully, when you're vetting your candidates, you're not doing it based on political party. You're not doing it based on what you would like or what you want to see or what benefits you personally. But you're vetting them based on the fidelity to their oath to support the Constitution. Which means knowing the Constitution becomes a bit more important, doesn't it? Now, as I said, John Jay said, every member of the state ought diligently to read and study the Constitution of his country. Now, I know it sounds like a big, difficult task. It sounds scary, but I came up with this idea called the Constitution Study. You see, for years, friends of mine and I, we've gotten together and we've studied the Bible. Now, the Bible's a lot bigger than the Constitution. The King James Bible is 575,000 words. The Constitution is 8,000 words. But the idea of getting together in groups, sitting, reading the Bible, discussing it, debating it, and trying to understand it, well, that resonates with me. So I started what I called the Constitution Study, where we can get together in small groups, we can read and study the Constitution, we can discuss it, debate it, try to understand it, become familiar with it. And that's one of the things I've been working on. I've done several constitution studies, and in 2022, I'm starting a new online study. So if you're interested, go to constitutionstudy.com/study, and you can pre-register. Now, I haven't set the schedule yet. I'm still looking for input about days and times that you would like to see this. But what I want to do is I want to go through and I want to read. I want to find a group of people that wants to read and study the Constitution. Not what the lawyer said, not what the politician says, not what the expert says. What does the actual document say? Now, the first three nights, we're going to cover the Bill of Rights, and that's going to be absolutely free. So if you just want to try it out, again, register, pre-register, constitutionstudy.com/study, and I'll sign you up, and you can join the first read. And if you like it and you want to go on, there's information on the website. But if you decide you don't like the way I teach or you don't think it's worth the money, well, that's fine too. So I'd rather expose you to something and have you go off and do something on your own than not expose you to the Constitution at all. So please, check it out. Again, that's constitutionstudy.com/study. And join me in 2022. And we're coming up to New Year, and I know a lot of people do New Year resolutions. Well, maybe your resolution will be, you know what, I'm going to read the Constitution. I'm going to study the Constitution. I'm going to learn more about my rights, about liberty, about freedom, and about our country. And if there's a way I can help, again, constitutionstudy.com. If you'd like me to come speak to your group, again, constitutionstudy.com. There's request a speaker in the menu bar. There's a list of talks that I already give, or I can do something custom for you. And if this is a not-for-profit event, in other words, if you're not charging people for this event, I don't charge you to come up and speak. These are all tools to help us learn that if we're going to trust people, how do we vet that what they're doing is correct? It's to give you that baseline. And all of that is there. You can find all that information. And if you're just not sure, if you have a question, again, constitutionstudy.com, ask a question. If I don't explain it well on the website, well, just ask me and we'll discuss it. That's kind of what I do. But I hope as we end 2021 and we look towards 2022 that you'll do so with me, whether it's here on the radio program or over at the website. Which is why I want to remind you that all my shows go to podcasts a day or two after they're heard here on the radio. So you can find them on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, and iHeart Podcast. Basically, anywhere you get your podcasts. And if you would do me a favor, if you like this show, go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe there, leave me a rating so other people can find the Constitution and also learn to secure the blessings of liberty.
Paid bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.